Crumbs and Filth, the Citizen Kane of podcasting. Modern man is confronted with so many movies. Which ones are films?
And which ones are filth?
In at number 80.
It's an American movie, guys.
It's a movie. It's an American movie that deserves to be put inside of a large straw structure and burned.
With or without bees?
Yeah, bees too.
Okay.
No, but bees no,
where's the bees guy?
No, we like
the bees.
Bees.
I
like
the bees out of it.
Yeah, we'll keep the bees out of it.
And leave all the goats and the chickens out of it too.
This one's stung.
So the bees or not the bees? That is the question.
There we go. Okay, that is a question of this movie. It's The Wicker Man, 2006. Films and Filth. That's the name of the podcast. This is Matt here. Hi,
this
who
is
are
Mark.
You? Who's missing?
Unfortunately, Luke is dealing with some bees.
The Wicker Man, 2006, made Luke physically ill. He emailed us in the middle of the night saying he was vomiting out both ends. We wish him well, but yep, we're kicking the British out of this podcast just as the movie did, and I assume the movie is what caused the illness. So
that's too bad. I could have called him Luke Summers Hayes.
Oh yeah. Well, you can still call him that next week, and it'll be out of context. And
I
fun.
Knew there was going to be a summer joke in there somewhere about him. Yeah.
And our guests today.
Oh hi, I'm Brian.
Oh I'm yeah. Shaney.
Okay, Shaney, you're definitely a guest. Welcome, Brian. I forgot you're a guest. You're always here. Usually on the other podcast. But
I remember that Brian was a guest. Anyway.
Because we do, just to plug too early, we all do Space 1999, a podcast 1999 every week until September or this year. So,
so well, maybe it'll get renewed for season 3.
Yeah, you never know.
So,
Ghost of Martin Landau could show up.
And we have a rotating cast of cats, too, so you may see several of them come by.
That's nice. Better than the bees.
Not the cats.
Better than cats. Cats greater than bees. Okay.
Cats are worse than bees. The movie Cats is much higher on the list.
That's true.
Yeah.
Another one I won't see.
I would rather watch that. Well, no, actually.
Well, then we have to bring you back for Cats.
Oh, goodness.
Well, I think as everyone here did, I think everyone watched the... Well, you guys know the original. Everyone has seen the original.
We are all
fans
of the original. You,
I grew
you,
up
Matt,
on the original.
Matt, introduced me to the original at some point very long ago, and I loved it so much that I ran out and bought it and watched it again numerous times. I watched it once, but I mean, I went into Wicker Mania for this. We'll get into that later.
Well,
everyone's journey with this? Oh, sorry. Mine is... that I heard there were going to be no songs in this when it came out, so I said pass, and I did not see it. So I only watched it just now for this podcast.
Well, no one saw it. What was the box office on this? I mean,
plenty of people saw it. I mean, so what? You didn't see it then?
I didn't see it until last night. Okay. Although on my rating system is how many views does it take for Matt to finish a movie? 2 for that. Although I interspersed it, like I watched 20 minutes. I watched 20 minutes of this, then 20 minutes of the old one, and then 20 minutes of this. So 3 viewings, excuse me. And then I watched the rest of the old one. So the old one was the 2 viewing one, and I should have done it in 1 viewing because that makes more sense. But I was like, I'll watch a little of both, and yeah.
I did the first one in 1 viewing, and this took me like 8 or 10. Brian and Shaney,
thanks.
This is your first time doing this, right? Watching this version?
I purposely boycotted the Nicolas Cage version, and I am a huge fan of Nicolas Cage, but I purposely boycotted this version because I grew up on the original. I first saw it when I was about 10 or 11 years old and was a huge fan of it. And when Brian and I first started dating, it was one of the first movies, the original movie, I insisted he watch with me. So I broke him in on it, and when he told
and
me,
I liked it,
of course he did. And so when he told me that this was something we would be doing, I said, "You mean I must watch the remake?" And so, yeah.
Your mission.
Thanks for that.
Oh, the movies we've had to see around here.
Yeah.
Well,
the unnameable movie, the one that we can't name on the podcast anymore.
The tagline for this piece of garbage is, the taglines are, some sacrifices must be made.
Okay.
Face your fears.
Okay.
Be careful what you search for.
B-E-E?
No.
Aww.
You're giving this movie way too much credit. This is a dumb movie directed by Neil LaBute and written by him also, who is an excommunicated Mormon. Okay. Actually, not excommunicated is the wrong word. The word is disfellowshipped.
Ooh.
He wrote a play that I don't have the name of it here. Who cares? It was about Mormons being bad people, so the church sort of disfellowshipped him, and he just continued not being a Mormon. But I think this movie proves that he does not understand that he was in a cult.
Yeah, most Mormons don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the original to me is it implicitly knows exactly what the cult depicted in the movie is. It knows that it's a cult. It knows that these people are gaining extreme power from their cultitude and glee. Sure. And I think another movie that does that perfectly well is Midsommar, which is any fans of Midsommar here?
I've actually never seen it. Weirdly enough. Yeah.
Love Midsommar. I love Midsommar.
Okay, you guys like it.
I'm a fan of, I haven't until I did a bunch of research seen this referred to as daytime horror, which I love. Well, Midsommar is referred to as daytime horror. This movie, Wicker Man 2006, not so much. But
well, it just doesn't have the horror, does it? It is mostly daytime, isn't it?
Midsommar and to a large extent the first Wicker Man and Shutter Island, all just broad daylight, just wall-to-wall daylight. Which
yeah, I was definitely going to throw out Shutter Island as like getting the Wicker Man remake vibe a little better while doing something completely different. I guess I should throw out my history. Again, we all just watched the LeBlanc version for this, but I showed it to Mark, apparently, which I half remember doing. My dad showed it to me because he saw it in an art house theater like in 73. And, you know, got it when it came out on DVD. And I could tell it was great at the time. I didn't quite get it because I didn't know enough about costs. I didn't know enough about, like magic with a K sort of stuff. So watching it recently, I'm like, oh, man, I halfway through the movie, I actually sent friend of the show, Scott, the DVD of the original for no particular reason other than I think it's his new favorite movie. So which he hasn't seen. So we are spreading the original around for sure.
I did not get
the remake.
Yeah, I remember when you showed this to me, I was basically laughing and clapping and singing along at the end of the film. Edward Woodward being burned up.
I do have to throw out when we told Luke, like, make sure to watch the original too. We were like, you know, it's kind of a cult film, it's kind of obscure. He's like, dude, I'm British.
Yeah, he said
yes. They're raised on it in Britain.
It's prerequisite.
Yeah, they like send it to your house along with the newspaper, you know?
That is great.
First announcement, Wicker Man.
In preparation for this, I watched Robin Hardy, who directed the original Wicker Man, made a sequel called The Wicker Tree based on his own book, Cowboys for Christ. It's worth noting that he did not write the original Wicker Man. That was Anthony Schaffer who wrote a script based on a novel called Ritual, which the guy who wrote a novel made a sequel to the novel in 2014. It's weird how much sequelage this has gotten in, you know, the last 20 years or so. But I don't know. That one is on good. David Pinner is his name, the author. And that book is called The Wicca Woman, and it's at a 2.85 on Goodreads. I did not find out about this in time to actually take it in. I did listen to the audio play of Anthony Schaffer's The Loathsome Lambton Worm, which is his sequel, which picks up right after the original movie. Sergeant Howie is rescued. That's the name of the cop in the original film, if you don't know. He was rescued by cops and then goes back to Summer Isle to like engage in a battle of wits or something and just is basically yelling at people, but then he starts hallucinating and seeing a bunch of monsters and then jumps off a cliff with eagles strapped to his arms to prove that Jesus is real or something. That one was
like you do
pretty bad. Mm-hmm. The Wicker Tree was okay. It was pretty decent. The whole
we thought
bit
it was fun.
With that, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I liked it a lot more than this.
It had kind of an ambiguous Christopher Lee cameo. Is he Lord Summer Isle? Is he not Lord? You're supposed to kind of believe mm-hmm. he's Lord Summer.
Yeah. but that the whole deal with that one is that it's evangelicals going to the basically some offshoot of the original cult trying to convert them to Christianity. And there's a really fun bit where they sing one of their evangelical songs back at the guy while killing him. So yeah, check that out. That's worth watching. But if you haven't seen the original, then you might as well watch that twice and then watch Midsummer once.
So I have a proposal for how we mm-hmm. go about this. And sorry, Brian, you said a while ago, a 9.6 opening weekend million for 2006's Wicker Man, if anyone wants to know.
Yes.
Because in our chat, the listener does not know that. Here's my proposal. For the next 15 minutes, we just talk about the remake, and then we don't.
I feel like
that's
I
all
have
the
a
time
lot
it deserves.
Have notes.
I feel like I have a lot to say about this.
Okay, maybe it'll go on longer than that if we. But I feel like we have to intentionally not talk about the original for a certain amount of time.
Oh yeah,
because otherwise we're just going to drift to that one. I think.
I'm sorry. I want to add one more thing to the Wicker Tree saga is that Robin Hardy crowdfunded a third movie called Wrath of the Gods, and it was going to be about people in California opening a Norse theme park, and steampunk is heavily involved and Vikings come into it, and he raised $8,000 and then died the year after that. So
that didn't happen. Steampunk Vikings,
that sounds kind of cool. I would
how did he die?
I
was
watched
burning
it
in a wicker man.
I don't know. They put him in the official Indiegogo Wicker Man and burned him. He raised $8,000 and $5,000 of that was one person paying $5,000 to be an extra. And Indiegogo, if you didn't know, they don't give you your money back if you don't hit the goal. So whoever that is, I hope you got your $5,000 back, dude. I know it was a guy because it said male extra. Anyway, okay. New movie.
Well, let's go for a plot for that first, which is here.
Richard Malus is a cop who fails to save a mother and daughter from a roadside accident. He takes a sabbatical during which he's contacted by an ex-girlfriend and goes to visit her weird neo-pagan island where they raise bees for honey. He discovers that despite this being America, it's ruled by some weird, extremely British pagans. He investigates the missing child, but in the end, he gets burned for some bees. And we don't even get to see him get stung by bees in the theatrical version, so what's the point?
Okay.
That covers the plot, yes.
Okay. They'll insert that later.
Yeah. This movie is more sexist than the people who hate Black Christmas. I think this is like some super hardcore misogyny. Do you guys feel like that? No?
I'm thinking about it. I mean, nobody's particularly likable. Yeah, well, I guess it's like, here's the scary female caught, don't trust them, is maybe what the new one is suggesting.
That, yeah, that's sort of what I'm saying, is that it feels like this is specifically about, fear, better hope that women aren't in charge. That's what this entire thing feels like to me. Nobody else really feel like that.
One weird thing about the movie is the actors come across well. I mean, none of us like Nick Cage any less having watched this. I mean, do I want to watch Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans now to see some real crazy Nick? Yes, but he's fine. Ellen Burstyn, that, like you're saying, that's where we're getting this anti-Black Christmas, thing going on, right?
Well,
she's not bad. She's just there.
He could have put more. Nick Cage is known for putting his all into it, like Vampire's Kiss. He ate that cockroach. You know, when he was laying on that cage, I was on that couch. I was, getting shades of Vampire's Kiss when he got under the couch for the coffin. I was getting, you know, Ghost Rider vibes, you know, when he was going after that car and it blew up, you know, but I did not feel he put his entire heart and soul into this movie like we know Nick Cage to do. I almost felt, you know, Willy's Wonderland, he cleaned that entire bathroom just for that, you know, cleaning scene. I didn't feel he put his entire being into this movie like he is known to do. I felt almost like he kind of half-assed it in this one. Like the entire movie was sort of half-assed. And that made me feel disappointed almost from the get-go.
Yeah, you know? I went into this thinking that I might like it. I was fully accepting. I was like, I think I might actually like this. This might actually be good. And it just was not, because it felt like Nick Cage knew he didn't have a lot to work with and he was frustrated by that, even though I also think that he's smart enough that he has never gone on record criticizing the film. He said the film was intentionally crafted as an absurdist black comedy, which I think is absolute lie. This is not structured like a comedy at all.
It wasn't funny, and Nick not selling it made that not funny, because again, Bad Lieutenant is a drama technically, but that's a black comedy just because he's going for it so hard. If anyone needs just a taste of that, go watch the scene of him talking to the lady at the old folks home. That you can just watch that clip on YouTube.
Well, he's given so much in that movie. This movie doesn't, basically has to react to everyone. Everyone is telling him, the especially frustrating thing is that it seems like Willow, the character of Willow, doesn't even really know what she's doing. It seems like she's supposed to be lying to him, but she doesn't know how to lie to people, which is a weird thing for a script where they have to know that most people know what they're going for, or else they wouldn't have put so many references in this.
In a cult structure, there's plenty of cult people going out not really knowing what they're doing. If I were going to try and just find some silver lining, some of the people involved in this are doing it just because they were told to and they want to stay part of the gang, you know? So for Willow, she really might not know that much, but it doesn't matter. Why does he have a personal connection with the island? I thought the whole point is it's just this completely outside thing, outside of your regular society, outside of your religion. Like, they put on a few airs. The town in here looks very, you know, like rustic, which would be fine in a movie, but you know, it doesn't look modern, which the old one's British modern. And and then the whole religion angle, you know, I mean, that's such a big thing that just isn't here. It's just cults. There's no religion.
Well, and it doesn't work to me as a cult, because these people don't, they're not really acting like they're in a cult. They're just acting mildly annoyed. And sometimes, I don't know, Ellen Burstyn lectures a whole bunch, but it doesn't really feel like she really has a point to what she's saying. Like, everything in the original movie felt like it was in place for a reason. It was a big, massive, big, massive conspiracy against the man who they lured to the island. And it felt like everyone knew the part they were supposed to play. You see the part where it sort of starts to go sideways and go out of control and he's like punching people and kicking them into walls, like, that doesn't fit. Like, they should be in control of the situation. I mean, like, the time they take his bullets, but if they were able to take his bullets, why not just take his gun? You know,
I don't like that the Rowan reveal that's still alive. That reveal is like what, halfway through the movie, which is kind of a weird place to put it. And then so they can put out that he's Rowan's father. It's like, what? No,
that made no sense.
You didn't have to be. Yeah, there was no point in that. And also we keep seeing these flashbacks to the kid getting killed by the truck or whatever it was, which.
Yeah, that whole opening sequence. How did that fit into this?
And that kid just gave me bad, you know, bad seed vibes anyway.
It wasn't filmed like a horror movie. It's a little bit of I'm going to start calling it the fog syndrome, where it just wasn't filmed like a horror movie. It wasn't scary. The flashbacks to it weren't scary. There were probably like 30 flashbacks to it. If you want to see a movie do that correctly, then watch Enter the Void, even though I don't like watching Enter the Void. But
I think people only watch that once, but
that does oh, you're going to relive this horrific car accident.
I didn't see the point of the car accident at all, because they just keep flashing back to it, like you said. But are we supposed to think it's a premonition of what's to come?
Like him falling through the roof. What was the point of that? You know,
it was, I guess, to make to imply that he was a sympathetic character, which doesn't help. This is the thing. Edward Woodward in the Sergeant Howie in the original movie is a bully, and he's, you know, walks in like his shit don't stink. He's a perfect Christian. He has the law on his side. He has Jesus on his side, and he's a virgin, and he's like, I'm not going to listen to anybody. And that's why that works. It's like, you don't want to send a guy who's a sad father who is sad that he didn't save a little girl to his death. It doesn't work. Also, after he's kicking a bunch of people and screaming that they're bitches, that's like, that doesn't work. None of that works together.
And he swears too.
And he never mentions Jesus.
No, he never mentions Jesus once.
I'm looking at my notes here. It looks like I tapped out 30 minutes in. 30 minutes in, and I'm going to jump ship and juxtapose this with 1973. Also, Nick was just crawling up a barn and falling, and it was kind of boring.
I got Money Pit out of that. I don't know.
the brilliance of the original screenplay, you know, it was not only was it like written by a Jewish guy who specifically wrote it not to take sides, which is part of why that worked so well, is that, okay, I mean, I picked a side by the end of the movie, but, you know, that's just me being a agent of chaos or whatever. But the thing is, that movie pitted, it was like new religion versus old religion. And the new religion, or the old religion, just got the drop on the guy who thought that his new religion just controlled everything, and he was humbled. And there's nothing like that here. There's nothing to hang your hat on. It's just basically, like I was saying earlier, maybe Black Christmas has poisoned me because it was so like, gender was such an issue there, and it feels like gender is an issue here, and it feels like,
well, that means the message of Black Christmas actually made it your way, doesn't it? And you know, they say podcast is, if it's always someone's first one of the one, you know, if you're first time here, we don't just rip apart bad movies every week. This one just kind of deserves it. Black Christmas, 2019. Not really recommending it, unless if you're a 14-year-old girl, sure. Not really recommending it, but we got a really good conversation out of it where we were like not ripping apart the movie, you know, just maybe accepting it's not for us, which the Wicker Man should be. The original is like directly up everyone's alley here to 73. Whereas this one is like, who is this for?
Sorry, go ahead.
The thing about it is that when you do a remake, the new one, the original had so much beauty, poetry, the way it was filmed, the way it was made, the tension, the buildup. The remake had none of that. There was no love. There was no tension, no buildup, no homage. You know, Angelo Badalamenti. Yes. You know, I love him. His music is great. But even his score, I have to say, was unremarkable for me. It just sort of faded into the background, you know, because the movie itself was so mundane. I was just sort of lulled into this sense of nothingness, that even the score was just sort of bleh. You know,
I think they were trying to go for a Twin Peaks vibe. It's like, if we have him there, we'll have that creepy Twin Peaks vibe. And it didn't happen.
No,
it wasn't. Like, maybe they gave him some temp tracks that were boring to imitate or something along those lines. But I agree, it was a weird, rare L for this guy. Because, like, I love Twin Peaks soundtrack. I love his work. I kind of agree that maybe they shouldn't make any more Twin Peaks after he's passed away. And it didn't work. It felt like generic just generic horror music.
Once Cage starts exploring around the island trying to find clues or whatever, my note there is just, this is now visuals, but As he looks around the island, do you think he will find more muted browns or more muted greens? Because even Twin Peaks, they got the red room. If you know, because Twin Peaks has that like kind of faded soap opera brown
Pacific
and green look.
Northwest.
And then you get the red room,
and then some to wake you up and
decker
pay
boards
attention.
And backward. I mean, there's things there, right? Which I guess is supposed to be like, what is it supposed to be here? I don't know. The bees. I guess that's it. I don't know.
Well, the thing is, this is one of those things where. I don't know what you'd call it when someone is addicted to Chekhov's gun habit. They're like, you know, there's something in the gas station that says everything's okay. And then later on he brings up, hey, have you seen my everything's okay pills or whatever it was? No, it's a book. I'm sorry.
What was with the like, pills?
They hammer the bees thing over and over and over. Like, oh no, I bet the bees are going to come up again. And just like the car accident thing. Like, we get it that he is upset and traumatized. It didn't end up doing anything for his character. Like, it just was like the movie had these things to get to, and to even to the point where they had him in a sack and they had to take him out of the sack so that he could behold the Wicker Man so he could go, oh God, and then put him back in the sack. Do you guys know the story of the original movie? That Edward Woodward insisted that they do not show him the Wicker Man until they bring him to the Wicker Man. So his reaction to the Wicker Man in the film is real.
Yes.
Which is, he was actually, he and Christopher Lee both like had a lot of input on that movie and were part of why it was good. I wanted to talk about one other thing about the weirdness of this film, that it feels like everything. Nick Cage is reacting to everyone like sarcastically, but he doesn't have any quippy lines. It feels like someone was trying to write Army of Darkness, but then didn't have anything to write. It feels like everything he said was like the thing that when you think you're going to say something really clever,
well,
to
you
shut
know
somebody
all
down,
Army
but you have nothing.
Love me some Army of Darkness.
Oh yeah, me too. But this is just, it's, do you guys feel like that's maybe some kind of offshoot of World War II where the Germans were this like elegant machine and Americans show up and are just like, yeah, you stupid Germans, we're gonna punch you in the face.
Well, he does sucker punch a lady and kickbox a girl in this film.
True.
Yeah. Do you think this is worth still playing out World War II?
It could be. They just wanted him to say some kind of clever boomstick line there.
Yeah. Anything. There was never, he was just all of his lines were like, okay, oh, can you just tell me where they are? Okay, fine. It was just a bunch of that.
But and again, it wasn't Nick Cage at his best. It was just sort of
Nick Cage.
He wasn't given anything. Yeah, it's this thing where I feel like this is, I didn't go into this thinking that it would be his fault. And I still don't think it's his fault, like at all. I think he just was not given enough material. And I think as somebody who should not have bought a castle. It's our second week in a row of like, we had Jeremy Irons, who shouldn't have bought a castle in Dungeons and Dragons. He knows the business well enough as a Nepo baby that he knows not to like trash talk even the bad movies he's in.
Right.
And he went on to be in like 80 more movies after this one than this is only about less than 20 years ago. I do agree with Matt that there's a lot of good actors here, like Molly Parker, who is in the Lost in Space Netflix show that I keep bringing up. She was the teacher. Lily Sobieski is back on her bad list.
I wasn't gonna say her name because I couldn't pronounce it.
I never saw anything with her in it until we started doing this podcast. I love her voice. Her voice is just like, hi, I'm Lily. That's a little low, but
who's this Lily?
Yeah, she has this low voice.
She was in a movie you did on this podcast not that long ago.
Uh-huh. In the Name of the King, a Dungeon Siege Tale. Much better movie than this.
Yeah. Yeah, easily.
Oh, but further down the bad list, so I guess that made it slightly better if it's down the bad
list.
Right.
It is rated more appropriately. I'm sure we'll see movies better than this down the bad list.
She looked very familiar to me, but I couldn't place where I'd seen her before. I don't think I have seen her anything.
And of course, the apothecary photographer.
Oh, the photographer, Frances Conroy.
We love her.
She's in like half or three fourths of all of American Horror Story, like every season. She's one of the regular cast members of American Horror Story. She's great.
I've not seen. I'm sure. I was
very
some
disappointed
crossover.
To see her in this.
Hey, this is slightly.
But she went
funny.
On to better things.
This is slightly funny. A year before this movie, Nick Cage made a movie called The Weatherman. So he went from Weatherman to Wicker Man.
Oh,
that's kind of fun.
Dude, the Weatherman felt like a personal
Witchman,
attack.
Weatherman.
Weatherman.
Which man? Which man?
This is more like a Woodman.
Which man? Has nobody seen The Weatherman?
No, I don't.
It's What's Nick Cage's. Nick Cage is basically just an ADHD, like manic bipolar fuck up who can do his job very well, but then his personal life is a total wreck, and he sort of gradually learns to sort of deal with his problems, and it's mostly just a sad drama. There's just this scene where he's basically in the middle of a divorce, and he just sees his wife, and he just throws a snowball at her, and it's like, ha. She's like, ah, what the hell's wrong with you? It's just, you know, that it feels like me. I don't know.
Mark, do you know what offended me the most in the end, though, about The Wicker Man 2006?
Was it
that it was,
what was it?
The dedication? Was it the dedication?
That's right.
Yes, the dedication to the worst Ramon.
Yeah, he was the worst Ramon, so okay.
There was no music.
They could have put Blitzkrieg Bop.
That's a good point. Yeah. maybe Johnny Ramone, but the reason it's dedicated to him is because he introduced the original film to Nick Cage, which basically that was not a good deed.
Okay, so it wasn't Joey Ramone. I guess that's the important thing.
maybe
Johnny, and then there's no music. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. I was just gonna say that Nick Cage watching The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man, in itself is not evil. It's just the making of this thing. But
I also hated the 6 months later scene, though. I'll give them a little small prop that the next one's going to be James Franco. It's like, okay, sure. If we have to accept this reality of this movie and it's continuing, then send James Franco in next. Break his knees, legs at the knees. That sounds good.
Wasn't Aaron Eckhart or something also one of the two guys?
Was that him? I thought that was James Franco. Oh, okay. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Aaron Eckhart got his knee started with LeBoot, right? In The Company of Men.
Yes.
Isn't that his first
big one? Which I didn't know anything about in The Company of Men before we started doing this. I assumed that was a movie about war because I thought it was, you know, a company of men.
Nope.
But that movie sounds like a nightmare shit show.
Yes, it is.
I've never seen it.
I have.
Oh, really? Here's some trivia from it. Aaron Eckhart said in a podcast that after he went to see the film in theaters, an angry woman came up to him and slapped him across the face saying, "I hate you." Eckhart tried to reaffirm that it was his character that she hated, but she replied with, "No, I hate you." According to director Neil LaBute, this script began with the line, "Let's hurt somebody," and developed from there.
It was a big art house thing in 97. Like if you were the dorky kid going to see all the art house ones, you went to see it, you know. He was in the queue for, you know, guys that are going to be the next big indie directors, you know, along with Wes Anderson and P.T. Anderson and maybe other Andersons, but not
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yeah, not that one.
Paul something else Anderson. The tagline for that is, "Are all men bastards or just misunderstood? ? I don't think I like this man. Misogynist is the top tag on this film. I think he's like just a Mormon poisoned bastard who hates women. But
he makes them
now it's getting
that.
Now it's turning into libel, and I have to stop talking. But
Well, I couldn't understand. You know, it was supposedly in the Puget Sound, correct? And very very you know, Wicker Man, very phallic-y. Not one mention of gooey ducks. Perfect opportunity, very phallic animal, didn't bring it up. I was waiting for it.
Were there any animals besides bees? And like there was a crow once, I think.
They changed the bird for the bug on the string, made it a bird in the desk.
Yeah.
You know, could have made it a gooey duck. Perfect opportunity. Girls, let's talk about the palace. Gooey duck.
That would be great.
So after In the Company of Men, he made Your Friends and Neighbors, which was kind of the same misanthropic vibe with a diminishing returns, I believe. And then there was Nurse Betty, which actually only has a 6.3, but I seem to remember people kind of liking that movie. But yeah, in the end, he didn't make anything you really want to watch up to the present. Yeah.
I was going to say, I want to imagine the gooey ducks instead of bees. They just throw gooey ducks at them. Nothing gooey ducks.
Well, when I worked on a Canadian island one summer, they had, that was a very Wicker Man thing when they did Canada Day, because I'm on an island and their thing was just putting a bunch of rubber ducks going down the creek in town and stuff and, you know, playing anthems. But it felt like 73 Wicker vibe. I mean, yeah, not the one, not this 2006 one. So
I'm so sad because I convinced myself that this might be good and it was worse than I thought it would be. Like this is the most disappointing. I guess I should feel like an idiot for thinking that it might be good.
No, but, it was rushed. It was shallow. It was lacking. I'm sorry.
No gooey ducks.
10-star review time. Do we even need to ask the questions of Film or Filth? By the way, I'm pushing this now so we could just talk about the original song.
palate cleanser.
Yeah.
I'm going to read another takedown of Neil LaBute after you do that.
Oh, yeah, you can do that now if you want, because I'm searching.
I'm reading an opinion piece that says that no one should produce his plays. The art you make is a reflection of who you are as an artist. For example, one of the theaters that produced LaBute's work the most, including several premiere productions, was Profiles Theater, a storefront theater in Chicago shut down after years of sexual assault, harassment, and physical abuse. A safe, healthy space is essential to making theater. Producing Neil LaBute's work is oppressive to women, people of size, people of color, people with disabilities, and many other groups, while simultaneously putting money into the hands of someone known to be problematic and hurtful. Keep your theater life safe and healthy, and truly consider your choice before producing or working on a Neil LaBute piece.
Yeah, I felt personally attacked after watching this.
There's a couple reviews here that are like entertainingly stupid. I'll read those 10.
These
first.
Are 10 star reviews.
These are 10 star reviews. There's two. These are very short. First one just says Nicolas Cage. Best movie. I thought it was good just because of Nicolas Cage's acting. 3 out of 9 found that helpful. This one's better. It's the same thing, but it's better. Nicolas Rage. I enjoyed the part where he punched a bunch of people. 4 out of 6 found that helpful.
And was this before AI?
Yeah. 2018. That's on the bot line. Reviews? 2019. That's on the line. These could be some early bots. Loved it. Okay. One of Cage's best movies. Very underrated. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that this could make a great dark comedy. Even the great Cage said it himself. Sure, it's categorized as horror, but the important thing is how we see a movie. Maybe it wouldn't be good if we view it one way, but if we view it differently, then we can enjoy this film. I mean, you get to see Nick Cage do a bunch of wacky stuff like wear a bear suit. I mean, what more do you need? Nicolas Cage shows that he can portray
TV off.
Something like The Wicker Man to serious roles such as Leaving Las Vegas. People say that Cage's career went down with roles like this, but in reality, it shows how capable of an actor he is. I'll give that, just not for this movie. He could be serious in some scenes to absolutely crazy in another. So this is shown best in the movie, from a serious conversation to the outrageous, infamous bee scene, not in the movie. It shows the Cage's skill as an actor. And he can really portray any kind of character, including a boring one. Sorry, that last part was my comment.
Five
out of 10 found that helpful.
I was going to add that this movie was nominated for 5 Golden Raspberries. And it did not win one of them. But the one you just said, reminded me of one, is Worst On-Screen Couple, Nicolas Cage and his bear suit.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was Midsummer.
I'll support a bear suit. I didn't. Put it in a different movie, but bear
like Midsummer. Good. Midsummer has the bear suit. They took the bear suit just to dunk on this movie, and you should see Midsummer.
Okay,
just
I know I should watch it. So it's one of those things. I'll find it on cheap Blu-ray, and then just
talk about
it,
the Mummers dance.
Yes, I was waiting for a Mummers procession, and I was so disappointed.
Oh man,
I waited the whole time.
There was no proper procession.
No
of
proper procession
or anything.
Yes.
It was just random people milling their way.
Random milling about.
So I asked my dad if he wanted to throw in any comments on this, since he did introduce me to the movie originally. I said, what's great about the movie? And he said it was the original is loud frolicking. Loud naked frolicking, I guess, but yeah, you don't get that in the new one either. But
that's a good point. I think the
old one is lots trimmed. Of frolic. All the frolic is taken out. It's
not one booby.
We didn't get one proper butt, did we?
No. But just the frolicking. They're not dancing with any fun. Again, that we don't get the music. That the music frolic, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. That's just it. They seem miserable, and it's they don't feel like they're having, like, they should be having fun with their awesome plan that they fully executed. I mean, come on.
A side glance at a maidpole. It's like, oh, there it is. Okay, don't look at it too much. It may wither.
That's maybe I joined the Call of the Original because only watching it for the first time last night, I was like, you know, this might not work. I mean, not the plan, but like burning, just sacrificing him. And, you know, I was just assuming that that's going to work and the crops will be fine next year.
Well, that's
Night I was like, you know what, that's not necessarily the case, which he's screaming, so I mean, it's not like the movie's not trying to tell that to you, but
I definitely, the thing I hated the most about the scene at the end is that it just shows Lily Sobieski's face, and then it plays...
By the way, I meant that I'm pivoting to 73 now.
Okay,
that
I but I just want to throw one final thought, is that it shows her face and then you hear the sound of Nick Cage screaming and the bees. As if you might have forgotten what happened like 2 minutes earlier. It's just, you do not need to do that. It's like so dumb. Anyway,
yeah, I didn't think it worked on this one. Maybe that's why I was so strongly rewatching 73, thinking, oh yeah, it may not work. Because in the newer one, yeah, that's not going to work. These people are idiots.
No. In 73, one part of the point is that when he says specifically, when the crops fail, you'll be in this wicker man's summer aisle. And he says they will not fail. That's what Anthony Schaffer intentionally put that in there. Cause he's like, maybe he's going to, they will fail. And maybe he's going to end up in the wicker man. Mm-hmm. Which
I like that ambiguity at the end. It may not be, it may all be for nothing.
And basically, you know, like most powerful people, he just yells really loud that his plan will work. And that's his plan.
Keep singing. You know?
And we know that
make
that
Summer Isle great again.
Don't listen to the hysterical religious man.
And that's the other thing in the original. I mean, it's so much about like, okay, here's modern British culture, and Summer Isle gives you the veneer of that. The newer one makes it feel rustic. The old one makes it feel like, this feels just like a early 70s British town. It's got a church. They don't believe it, but they have some, you know, they kept the old gods, right? Which, you know, is.
And those rituals were real. Those were real rituals that they were doing that were ancient, which was fascinating because I've read up on a lot of rituals. I mean, it was amazing to me that those, you know, that the egg fertility thing and putting the frog in your mouth for a sore throat and it taking the croak out. I mean, it was actually, you know, sucking on something afterwards that would soothe the sore throat. But people did believe that the frog would take out the soreness, and the croak was why, you know, the soreness was gone. But, you know, so they instilled a lot of ancient beliefs in the original one, which was another reason why it was so good.
Right, it's built on something where the newer one, where they were like, well, we were in Salem and then they burned it, so we moved west, blah, blah. That's not the depth of using actual.
They're trying to get that whole sort of, you know, witch like, vibe, you know, persecuted also, across the land sort of thing. Yeah.
Also, Summer's Isle is a much worse name. Just put an S in the name so that it's harder to say. It's like Summer's Isle. It's like the opposite of rolls off the tongue. It's just.
Sounded like Summer's Eve.
Summer's Eve. Maybe that was the joke. Maybe that's why it was a black comedy. He's just like, get it? Summer's Isle. I'm just assuming.
It's one of those changes that just makes no sense.
I had read that they did it because they said Americans couldn't pronounce Summer Isle.
What? Summer's Isle. Summer.
Summer's
the dumb Americans in the writer's room. I couldn't pronounce it.
Americans can't say Costco. They say Costco.
Costco is the brand of the push carts that they sell.
I've gotten extra confused in Japan because they do have Costco's here and there, but they actually also have a drugstore called Costco, and it took me like 10 years before I even realized these were like two different things. So
Oh, I got my my back scratcher from Daiso, by the way, Matt.
Oh, well, nice.
Yeah. That looks like something I've seen, at least.
It looks like a 5,000 fingers of Dr. T hat for me. Happy fingers.
Oh, yeah. Happy fingers.
But, right. Yeah, I mean, the thing with, you know, British history in general is, was it a north of Hadrian's Wall? It was like fair game. Anything's going on way into almost the modern era and into the modern era, which is the, you know, kind of the charm of the 73 movie, that little sliver of ancient knowledge. I mean, going back thousands of years, real stuff, you know.
It's also just
why until you're killing people, which, well, you know what, that doesn't even matter, because I was just about to say, if you believe in that as hard as you do in Christianity, it's probably fine. And I was going to say, unless you're killing people, and hey, both of them do that too, so whatever.
Well, they save the killing until the end. I guess there's a corpse in the bag at the beginning of the new one, but also the pilot's
dead. It was
dead.
Supposed to be like a like livestock, I think it was supposed to be.
Kicks at him, but then he just drops it and doesn't worry about it. It like almost kicks him in the face.
Was it like a red herring that they thought Rowan was in the bag or something? That's why they put that there. So maybe it's the girl he's looking for. No, it's not.
That's for the audience to decide.
I think it's just they put a bunch of creepy stuff in a movie and didn't worry about like how it actually played out. Like there was a bunch of stuff, like the guys, the men in the man bar or whatever, who couldn't talk. Like, I guess they got their vocal cords cut out or something. I don't know. Nobody seemed to care.
Just random weirdness.
Vow of silence?
They couldn't sing and frolic. Yeah.
That's the thing. As much as we talk about how good the everything in the original movie is grounded in reality and makes, at least it's based on something, the new movie is a lot of just random stuff. Oh, look at this. Look at this creepy thing. You know? It's just like, oh, there. And it's...
We're going to give you creepy, but we're not going to give you anything, you know, to really sink your teeth into like the original did. That's going to add to the story.
You give Ellen Burstyn, who's a brilliant actor and does a great job anyway, just give her a bunch of exposition to dump that doesn't feel like it makes any sense or has anything to do with anything. And,
well, Christopher Lee's also exposition dumping. It just is the best exposition dumping ever.
But well, in the original, that he had an entire exposition speech at the end that they cut out because it was unnecessary if you paid attention to the movie.
Yeah, it's almost like the opposite.
Neil, that's on the
4K. Go check out the interviews and stuff.
Yeah, I ended up watching the final cut version this time, which one? It's 1:34, yeah. I think. Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. It's the final cut. Yeah.
I sent Scott the, one time.
The two disc set has all his extra interviews and stuff on it. Pretty cool.
I kind of like the shorter one better, but that's probably because the new footage or the extra footage all kind of looks washed out. But I do think that the butchered version moves pretty well of the original film. That is,
no, I had no compunctions when I ordered, because that was the one I got for Scott and sent him, and I was like, that's the 98 minute version, but whatever, it's still great.
Whoever was editing that knew what they were doing.
It's not like Blade Runner, where it's like you really need to be careful which one you're watching.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I never once rewatching that for this a couple of weeks ago, I didn't feel like anything was missing, which is important. When you watch Metropolis and it's the regular version of that, that feels like stuff missing.
But, oh, yeah.
But then it's very long if you watch the full version.
Watch the full version. Come on, at the correct speed. Play some music over it if you want. Yeah, you can do that. Can't do that with Wicker Man. It's got its own music.
Oh, it's great.
What's your jam? Which song is your jam?
Oh, I mean, what's that song? Will You Fuck Her Gently, Johnny? Is that the name of it? I think that's the name of it.
Gently Johnny.
I think it's just called Gently Johnny.
When they send this the little sacrifice up to Willow.
Mm-hmm. Do you know
corn rigs and barley rigs?
Corn rigs are Bonnie, which is based on a poem by Robert Burns.
Oh.
A lot of the things are based on poetry. Like there's a Walt Whitman poem I think, yeah, his speech about living amongst the animals was based on poetry by
One that he's getting the Dark Lord somewhere. I was looking
at
the snails.
Yeah, the snails. Yeah, that's based on Walt Whitman's poetry, a poem by Walt Whitman.
I can probably find it.
But the corn rigs are Bonnie is Robert Burns. So that's where that song came from.
Wow, I didn't know this, but Paul Giovanni, who did all the music, died in 1990. And that was sort of the only thing he did. I guess he had an LP in 1970 and then worked on a play called The Crucifer of Blood in 1978, which I don't see anything about here.
But, I'm looking at this and I'm like, there's even that many songs in here. Okay, the ones.
Gently
this Johnny, is the soundtrack. Humorous is available on Spotify if you love it.
It's not like that type of music is not really like my I don't know.
That's your jam.
Not really my jam, but I love every second of every song in the movie. It's like it works so well in that context. And whatever that version of folk music is, it's got a little bit of a weirdness to it that I absolutely love.
Have you ever listened to like Pentangle?
No.
That's kind of, they do stuff along these lines and they're quite good. There's a Basket of Light is one of their very good albums. I do. I mean, I guess it's not your jam. I do like this stuff more. And
gonna say, if you're like doing garden work, you know, like out mowing the lawn, if you're like singing, you know, Quicker Man songs at the top of your lungs, are you gonna be the neighbor everybody likes, or the neighbor you're gonna stay away from?
I get ready in the morning, fresh out of the shower. Do the butt slapping dance when he gets up.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, Willow's song is the one that usually ends up being stuck in my head from time to time. So I guess that's my favorite.
Doesn't it all to everyone?
There's a lot of, I don't know what you would call it. Like Matt, you probably know, like the effect that's on the guitar at the beginning of Jesus by the Velvet Underground, like that effect, like that type of guitar shows up a lot in that soundtrack. It's like a weird flangey sound.
Yeah, I guess I know what you're talking about. I'm sitting here thinking, is it just a string bend? But
it's probably something like an analog chorus that they don't make anymore.
Or just rewiring the studio in some way might actually be I don't feel like it's a strong one. But but that song is certainly in this realm, for sure.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I'm getting so distracted by tabs. I have too many tabs open. See, Matt, you're doing better if you don't have tabs open.
No, now I'm on the new computer. Now I have plenty of tabs open.
I was looking up the May Queen because the May Queen figures very heavily into into Midsummer. But you don't want to be the May Queen in the Wicker Tree because she's stuffed. I don't know what the rules are.
I mean, we used to do the maypole at school, but Brian said he never did the maypole at school.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, I guess I do have there was something like that in elementary school, come to think of it. But we certainly it wasn't a big thing and they didn't have us frolic around naked. So
that's good. That's good.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a real good thing.
That's a good thing.
The part we did that was different.
I feel like our school experience was much more secular than you might get now. I don't know.
Played Fish Family. No. Different movie.
Yeah. See, this is the problem with this podcast is that I felt like I had so much to say about the bad Wicker Man, and I feel like I don't have enough to say about the good Wicker Man.
I have so many notes on the
She's got
so many.
She's got lots of things to say about the good Wicker Man.
Okay, good. Take the floor on that because Mark's brain is sputtering out.
Yeah,
I just want to be like, movie good, see movie, it's so good.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the original, that was not Britt Eklund. She was very upset that they used a body double
right
for Rod Willow's Stewart dance.
It was
alleged,
he wanted Oh,
Yeah,
sorry,
he
go
wanted
ahead.
that cut out because he was very upset, thinking it was her body, but it wasn't her body. And it was alleged that it was somebody named Lorraine Peters. But in fact, it was not a Lorraine Peters. It was a Glasgow stripper that was used. But Britt Eklund was very upset because the person they used had what she thought was too large of a butt.
Well, big
But
enough to slap, though.
oh, good slapping butt. But
Apparently.
I like the butt personally.
Well,
But yeah,
there
no,
was a.
she was pregnant at the time,
Yes.
apparently.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who,
So
stripper or Britt
there was
Eklund?
Britt Eklund,
Oh, okay.
not the stripper. No.
When The Wicker Man did really poorly, it was there were rumors that Rod Stewart like somehow made the movie fail by buying up a bunch of copies of it or something. I don't know how this
He tried
works
to,
in the
but he did. He
70s.
didn't. Yeah, he tried to,
I
but apparently he
don't.
failed.
So is
Hmm.
that like an interesting parallel to the trying to make the crops fail? Was he upset is obsessed with trying to keep his girlfriend out of everybody's.
Well, it's
That's
a little
more like
less
Charles Foster
arcane.
Kane buying all the bad reviews of
Or
his
something like
film. Yeah, kind of.
that.
I mean that's an act that's a
Possibly.
cause and effect direct cause and effect action at least
Yeah.
if they are all in your house or you buried them next to the ET cartridges then people will not be able to experience it.
You know, if you're going to watch an homage to Wicker Man, your best bet would be actually Hot Fuzz, because that
Oh
was
yeah.
really, yeah, made more, you know.
Creepy atmospheric, like there's something weird about this town, sort of.
Right. And that was made to pay honor to Wicker Man.
We had a lot of horror story, actors and stuff show up in Hot Fuzz, didn't he? I
Yes,
can't remember the whole
there's a crazy amount
yes.
of crossover with everything, including like even Space 1999 actors show up in it. Filmed in Luke's hometown, so it's like the
Yes.
most the thing he's most
Just to tie
famous.
it in a little tighter.
Oh yeah. Hi, Luke.
Awesome.
Well, and that's also one of my favorite movies. In fact, I mean, I might put that in the top. I'd probably put both those in the top 100. It's like 100 is a lot, but you know.
Hot Fuzz
You
again.
love
Wicker
Hot
Man would
Fuzz.
go higher, but yeah.
Yeah, I was watching last night. I was like, okay, realistically, I think I could put this in my top 20, you know?
Yeah,
Top
it
10,
would.
not sure. Not I'd have to sit there and make out a list. I'm not gonna do anyway, but
It's yeah, it's so difficult because I'm like, oh, well, what about this? What about this? And then
Right. But if I
you end
really
up
thought it,
with
I
a
think it could
hundred.
make the top 20. Yeah, probably not the top 10, but top 20.
Yeah, you want to
Yeah,
talk
but I
about
think
something where
that
I'm
one.
tempted to rewatch it after we record this podcast. Like, that's how much I love that movie, which I am
Yeah,
not a
that's a
big
good one.
rewatcher. Not a big
No.
rewatcher of things.
You got a few more notes you want to hit there?
What?
Yeah,
Oh,
you said you
yes.
had notes.
Please do. Please
I
do.
did not watch the old one and take notes. I just decided to watch it,
Oh,
so.
well, one of my main points that I felt was, you know, just Edward Woodward's reaction at the end was, you know, the beauty in his resignation of being thrown into that Wicker Man, and his, you know,
His faith, yeah.
his faith, his the way he just took it, and he started singing, and you know, juxtaposed to Nicolas Cage and his screaming meanie, yelling.
Screaming his head
Yes,
off.
you know, the complete different, there we go again,
Oh, sorry.
difference of it. Again, it just the difference between the poetry and the recklessness kind of brought it all home between the two different movies, and then they had to completely wreck the second one as if it wasn't wrecked bad enough with that false ending of, eh, we're going to throw Willow out there again to lure in some other schmo and bring him back. You know, I don't know. I just the first one was just so beautifully done and so, like I said, poetic and gorgeous, and it needed nothing else. It was just encompassed so beautifully. I don't even know what else to say.
I was
Just
thinking like Twilight Zone question, does the person deserve their trip in the Twilight Zone? Which you could say that's the case for
Yeah.
the Wicker Man. I was thinking, well, in the first one, Woodward does. He even knows it. He, that's this why he's singing at the end. Whereas Nick Cage doesn't. He gets schlubbed into it. And
I think,
yeah.
But I think the beauty of it is that neither one of them deserve it, but they're both, well, Edward Woodward, much more than Nick Cage, is a bully and we don't like him. And he's unlikable. He doesn't do anything to deserve getting murdered. That's sort of the thing.
No.
He's a surrogate, you know, he's a surrogate for, he's like a representative of Christianity. It's like Kill the Messenger. That's basically what that movie is. Nick
also, yeah, definitely you have, thinking you know, biblical murders as he's dying, like, oh, this happens in the Bible a lot, doesn't it?
And it's like Nick Cage, you could argue that his character towards the end, he starts kicking women into walls and stuff, so that's maybe a display of what his true nature is, but there's no indication that he was like that towards Willow or anybody else. I mean, I guess you just say ACAB and chalk it up to that. Like, sure, burn all cops.
It's in his nature.
Well, the key all is cops the car are burned. Accident. The key is the car accident, of course.
That's, yeah, that was almost
somehow
just
somehow
should not. It's almost like putting that car accident in there completely undercut any meaning that it, like any meaning that the film could have had. And it was just the entire first 10 minutes of the film. It's, I've never seen a film just like step up to the plate, shoot itself in the foot so efficiently as it did.
So much that they left in the movie they could have taken out, and so much that they took out of the movie that they probably should have left in. I'm not sure because they didn't show me the full movie.
So many lines from the first one shoehorned into the second one.
That's a huge
yeah.
bugaboo with me. As like Inside Baseball that I don't think I've brought up before is that the previous podcast, Matt and Luke's Sci-Fi Sanctuary, Matt was gearing up to do Total Recall 2012, the remake of that. And I was going to be on that episode, and I started watching it. And I think, Matt, you made the call not to do it when I was about halfway through it. And I thought that was absolute garbage, dog shit. And technically a more efficiently, correctly made movie than this is, but it had all these lines shoehorned into it from the original movie, like 2 weeks. Was just shoved in there somewhere, things like that. And it was just like, what, why? You have Bryan Cranston, for Christ's sake. Like, it was just such a dumb, and it had more lens flares than the entire Star Wars Kelvin trilogy times three. It had just lens flares.
Trek, don't piss off your Trekkie friends.
hey, just because it has lens flares doesn't mean I don't like it, but you know.
No, you said war is not Trek. I'm calling you out.
Did I say wars?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. No, Kelvin Star Wars movies are coming soon. I'm sorry. No.
I think they already did. JJ got both franchises. So yeah. There you go. One thing I wanted to ask. Both these movies deal with multi-generational cults on an island. It seems like they would be luring in people, not so much to sacrifice them, but for breeding stock. But they didn't do that in this movie. But in The Wicker Tree, spoiler alert, they do, right? Uh-huh. Because there's actually a fertility problem in the village. And so they take advantage of one of these strapping young men. I just wondered if that was something, because Matt and I were talking about The Twilight Zone, which I think is next week's episode or something, about Valley of the Shadow.
It's like a
little town off the main roads that has a big secret, you know. And I think, oh, they lure people in from time to time so they can, you know, procreate and have more, you know, non inbred inhabitants of this town. But in fact, they don't. It's like in neither case they did that.
In Twilight Zone, I feel like we're still in the zone, the TV zone of we can't talk about reproduction at all.
Well, yeah, 1963, yeah.
We were still in that period where if you're on TV and you kiss someone, you have to say you're in love and then say you're getting married, which did happen and in his image. But
you have to wait till like a boy and his dog before you got into these sorts.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm getting lots of great one star stuff for 73 Wicker Man.
Sure.
I'm not trying to stifle anyone's thoughts, but
no.
I'm chomping at the bit to read a few of these. One,
go for it.
Okay.
One directly, this sentence directly affects this podcast purview that you could actually say that they backed up the truck of pure filth and poured it all over celluloid, thus creating the Wicker Man. I can't tell if they're talking about the new one or the old one from this review, though. They might have put it in the wrong place. So
I bet somebody got lost.
They might have gotten lost. Now, this person did not get lost. Wicker Man is disturbing for all the wrong reasons. First, the director seems to think that daylight is the perfect time for over 90% of his supposed horror film to take place. We agreed with
how dare they
light order. Yeah, he is wrong, dreadfully wrong. Secondly, he seems to think that musical sequences involving percussive nudity addressed to the camera have their place in horror films. Of course they fucking do.
Yes.
Give me more.
I think that's a religious person.
Oh, no, no. That's the next one I'm going to read.
Tell me.
I told you, I got lots of hits here. Okay. Satanic film, not for kids. Avoid at all costs.
Nobody told my mother that.
This is a vile film with a horrifying ending. Christians are strongly encouraged to avoid this film, which thankfully is out of print. If human sacrifice is your thing, this film is for you. Please do not let children see this loathsome film.
Forbid. Where's my fainting couch?
This one's kind of more fun. Brigadoon meets Hair meets Dracula, sort of, anyway. Not long ago, I saw Plan 9 from Outer Space, supposedly the worst film of times for the first time, of all times for the first time. Well, this one beats it fair and square. No. It's all about an island filled with hippies of the classic school. Some were obviously still around 1973 when the film was made. Hippies. Pretending to be Scotch? Okay. Pretending to be Druid.
And soda.
Their lord is Christopher Lee, pretending to be Peter O'Toole. Their love god is Britt Eklund. Lovely breasts, but cannot dance. Also not her breasts, I guess. Okay. Oh, wait. There's one.
No, shot. It's the bottom.
It wasn't her
butt. It's the bottom. It's the butt. Yeah.
It was her dancing, I guess.
Yeah,
it was not her dancing.
They couldn't just put her head.
The tagline
but
is,
cannot
wasn't
dance.
Her butt.
That was, yeah. And their chief adversary, Edward Woodward, pretending to be a cop, but really an Ingmar Bergman pastor. Sure, why not? There's also a dead rabbit, a swallowed frog, and possibly the most awful music score ever. Undoubtedly influenced by Auld Lang Syne, as interpreted by a third-rate Moroccan rock
them spitting words.
German tourists. I would like to hear that. I guess that's why I like the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have, as a late addition, I have the taglines for the 73 Wicker Man, and these are some corkers right here. From the writer of Frenzy and Sleuth, Anthony Schaffer's incredible occult thriller. Did you know he wrote Frenzy?
No, Frenzy's on.
I've never seen.
I got it right over there. I can go watch it.
I've never seen it. Should I watch it? Yeah, I guess I probably should.
I'm just telling you it's in my Hitchcock box. I'm not telling
you. Okay, good. The residents of Summer Island invited Sergeant Howie to their traditional May Day festival. He didn't expect to meet the Wicker Man. An island lost to unspeakable terrors of, and this is in all caps, pagan rituals.
Yay!
They're unspeakable because they're pagan.
Yeah.
These are American taglines because they sound like they're going straight for the grindhouse.
They don't. The taglines are never, they never specify where they're from. I just assume they're from all over. The 20th century never touched Summer Isle, where pagan fertility rites and blood sacrifice live on! You'll simply never understand the true nature of sacrifice. That's in quotes for some reason. An incredible cult thriller of pagan practices and fertility rites. And it says R-I-G-H-T-S, which makes me think that's not real. That's not what it means.
What about pagan fertility wrongs?
Flesh to touch, flesh to burn. Don't keep the Wicker Man waiting. And a totally corrupt shocker from the author of Sleuth and Frenzy. Good stuff.
I was just trying to look at how this thing was released originally. The DVD commentary track, which maybe you listened to, states that studio executives suggested a more upbeat ending where a sudden rain puts the flames of the Wicker Man out and spares Howie's life.
But the glass, I would have been screaming.
And I think I have seen this. Hardy subsequently had to remove about 20 minutes of scene on the mainland, early investigations, and some of Christopher Lee's part, which I guess I do remember seeing the mainland stuff at some point. I've watched that, haven't I? And I definitely like the shorter cut.
Well, there's
cut.
Stuff
yeah.
in his church. There is stuff.
Well, there's
in,
that.
In,
there's that. But there's yeah. a lot more. There's like him doing detective work on the mainland. And
yeah,
like,
the church stuff's the only stuff that survived, I think.
Yeah, I do remember seeing that somewhere. Maybe it was the deleted scenes on the disc or, yeah. Or I don't think I'm Mandela affecting that into my mind.
Schaffer's sequel, The Loathsome Lambton Worm, had a lot of mainland stuff where he basically, after he's rescued, after Sergeant Howie's rescued, he's sort of burned. And then it's a bunch of people who are like, you're obsessed with this cult. Nobody really believes him, I guess, even though they clearly rescued him from being executed. And he tricks another like cop into going back there with him. And the cop is like murdered in one of the Mayday games. It was Halloween, though. So it's like, get it. It's not Mayday anymore. It's Halloween. Yeah, Samhain. It's they kill him like throwing a sickle at him and cutting his head off or something. And
good aim.
And he, you know, of course, he's very mad and indignant that the guy that he tricked into coming with him to the murder island got killed by them. It's not great.
I can see the tagline's going to be, "You thought Mayday was bad. Wait till you see Halloween on Summer."
Yeah, I think that basically. Oh, and also. That story is that when they rescue him out of the Wicker Man, everyone ages 20 years immediately, which he wrote that script in 89. So he was probably thinking they could film it with the original actors and they're 20 years older. So, oh no, everyone. Yeah. That's a terrible idea.
Although now you can CGI them back down to their age in 1973.
Sure. You could just put CGI Christopher Lee in your movie now. Shouldn't.
but you
want to add,
do not do that.
As far as all this sequel mania stuff, Robin Hardy's two sons, Justin and Dominic, did just run a successful Kickstarter where, you know, they raised the money, they did it to make a documentary about the making of the Wicker Man, where they found a lot of just basically papers from the run up to the making of the movie. They have a lot of stuff. It looks like they go in depth into the making of it, the financial failure, the sabotage, all the stuff. I think making the festival rounds this year. So the 50th anniversary of The Good Wicker Man was last year, and they basically got it done right then. So look for that. It's called Wicker Mania, Search of the Wicker Man.
I've got a couple points to on my previous points. The longest cut you can watch is 99 minutes, so you can see some of that extra 20, but not all of it, which is fine, really. And this was released, I was wondering how this was released in Britain, because in America it was like Grindhouse, and it was the B picture on a double bill with Don't Look Now, which I brought up 2 weeks ago. So that makes sense. So it's like kind of it's a B movie, but maybe not a Grindhouse in Britain. So
Luke said, they made everybody watch it in England.
Right.
I think some of the negatives also were accidentally destroyed or buried or something under a roadway.
It seems some of it was considered, but it's probably a little bit of both, where they thought a lot more of it was lost and eventually found some of it. So again, it's, I guess, a Metropolis thing.
I have seen the 99 minute cut.
That's what I'm thinking of, where we spend more time on the mainland. Yeah, but not. Mm-hmm. Like 20 minutes. Okay.
Well, I don't remember very much about it, except that a lot of the extra stuff felt unnecessary, and a lot of the extra stuff, the extra stuff that was good was sort of just longer versions of scenes that were already there.
Yeah. That's, I think, a bit of religion straight to the island is probably the best course for this movie, you know?
Absolutely. Because you don't want to get, you get so wrapped up in the paganism. It's better for Christianity to be that like distant monolith, because then you get the distant monolith at the end. It's the big giant Wicker Man. So yeah, it kind of rhymes. I don't know. It's a perfect movie. I don't, no matter what length.
The one thing I'd like to do is to been on the set of The Man with the Golden Gun when Brett Ackland and Christopher Lee bumped into each other again after making this movie. It's like, oh yeah, we were just filming last year in Scotland.
I see that you've bumped into me. I can't do his voice.
Oh, on the extras, when they're talking about the cut speech at the end, they bring on this actor who does a great Christopher Lee.
Oh, wow. I had him read the speech.
He read the speech. He read it in Christopher Lee's voice. It was great.
Somebody can do it.
There was a production of the Loathsome Lambton Worm that I listened to, this an audio play that was really good acting in it. It's just the writing kind of was bad, but nobody, they didn't even attempt to get someone who sounded like Christopher Lee or Edward Woodward. The guy sounded just completely different. But you know,
I'm Lord Summerisle. What's up?
That's out there on like podcast apps and YouTube. Yeah, it's like that. Well, hello there. I'm Lord Summerisle. How are you today?
Well, I'm just really glad that Edward Woodward, you know, Ghost came back as a crime fighter and became the Equalizer.
Yes, exactly. That actually makes more sense than the Loathsome Lambton did. It's like the Wicker Tree at least was smart enough to just detach the story just entirely, even though there are a couple of shout outs, like somebody has the name Morrison, but it's not gratuitous like the remake is. Oh, okay. There's only a couple little threads.
Yeah, and it was fun.
Yeah, I agree. You know, watch that before you watch the Nick Cage one. If you're gonna watch a Nick Cage movie,
if you're gonna watch a Nick Cage movie, don't.
You've got like 100 better Nick Cage movies to watch than this. That's the great thing about it, is that he's done some. There are a bunch that I haven't even seen.
I recommend Color Out of Space. That's a good one. I recommend the 2006 Wicker Man for people who are about to record a podcast about the 2006 Wicker Man.
Co-signed.
Hey, yes. He's even in Grindhouse. Nick Cage.
Which is directed by one of my favorite current directors, Panos Cosmatos. Mandy is a better Wicker Man movie than this. There's a cult in it.
I think everyone knows what you mean.
Yes, everyone knows what I mean. I'm not talking about the Wicker Man from 1973.
Just called a perfect movie.
It's a perfect movie. It's better than Mandy. It's okay. It's better than Mandy.
I think at least two of us are about to go to work, so I guess we'll wrap it up for today. Do you guys have anything to plug than that you hang around here and we're about to talk about that?
Who, us?
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for inviting me on to speak about this perfect movie.
Mm. Oh, thank you for coming and being our May Queen for this May Day parade. This probably I am honored.
She has a whole wardrobe. You can invite her back for different things.
Yes. Yeah. Nice. Well, you don't need to, but thank you for having me on and not burning me.
You are Maybe welcome. This is Brian has a list.
Stopping you.
Yeah.
Brian has a list, and he can show it to you.
I can show you the list of all the movies that are upcoming if you want to come back and do another
one. Back anytime. Hopefully for something better than this, because this
and something great. This is the most films and filthy episode, because we have we really do have like, I think, a 10-star and a 1-star. Maybe.
I don't think there's a movie
2006 and higher than 1-star. I mean, that feels like I'm being a hater. I think 3 is actually the score it has on IMDb is correct, I think.
I will say I like it better than the Fog remake or Dungeons & Dragons 2000, but only by a little bit. Okay. Like, I don't think it's much better than those.
Yeah, this is the case.
Wicker Man, I might like the Wicker Man better than any movie on the list, period, except maybe Old Boy. That might be the only one that beats it.
Oh, Old Boy, yeah. Now, I had to sit through Once Upon a Time in America with him, and I was mad.
Oh, sorry.
These are the guys who made me watch that.
I'm sorry, we don't say the name of that movie on this podcast anymore.
Oh, is that the one you don't want? Sorry, the movie that shall not be named. Yes. I was mad. I was mean mad.
We found ourselves referencing it like every week, and we're like, we have to stop referencing it.
That's a bad. And I'll tell you why it was named Noodles. I will tell you why, but you don't deserve it.
Okay. Wicker Man is currently 3.8 on IMDb. I would give it a 3.2. I think it deserves it. I don't know why I want to give it that specific rating, but
is it because Luke's not here that you're going to just go and throw numbers out? Because he's not here to tell you to stop throwing numbers out?
Yes.
All those numbers are just bullshit anyway.
Give it a 1.2, but I would taste it.
I'm going to give it.
That's three. A chef's reaction.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to give it 2 bee stings.
Okay.
But I'm going to give it 1.5 gooey ducks.
Wow, as in, that's how much fun. Have gooey ducks, yes.
I don't. Yeah, a gooey duck and a bee sting. I don't want to be beast. I don't want to be
is
stung
it
by
worth
bees.
The bee? Is it worth the bee? I don't know. That bee would die.
Yeah, bees need to be serious when they sting you.
Yeah.
If somebody was like, hey, you can either be stung by one bee or rewatch The Wicker Man 2006, I would consider the bee sting.
Yeah, I'm not allergic or anything.
Two, maybe
but would
not.
The bee
I'm not
consider it?
Bee no, stings and gooey ducks and bee stings
are Bonnie.
Hey, where were we? We are on Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius. You can support us there, get some extra chit chatter. Mark, Brian, and I also talk about Space 1999, a podcast 1999. These folks show up on Time Enough Podcast, where we talk about the Twilight Zone. And Luke may not be here today, but you can catch him on Luke Loves Pokemon, Hyrule Field Report, which is coming up to its exciting conclusion on Zelda's Tears of the Kingdom, right? Did I say the right
yeah,
one?
Yeah, they're finally going to get to Zelda and fight Zelda. At the
okay.
end
of- we're fighting Zelda and we're of course the game game the show game. Which recently had a Mark Luke and I doing
yeah.
a game with, so it's kind of like a short Films and Filth episode in a way if you want to go check out the game game show.
It references things not the Wicker Man because there's no Wicker Man game, but
maybe there should be.
If they ever talk about Elder Scrolls be? Online, I'll be
is that missed
gal.
It's missed the
actually
Wicker
yeah
game.
Elder Scrolls Oblivion expansion Shivering Isles actually is pretty Wicker Man.
Oh, there you go.
That's a little deep cut for you.
Do you have that one?
I am Khajiit in heart.
Nice.
This one will speak to you about this.
Nice.
Well, you'll find her on Xbox all the time playing.
Every night.
Every night playing Elder Scrolls. That's where she needs him.
Yes, I played Oblivion as a Khajiit. So. Oh, yeah, cat gang.
Awesome. You make this one very happy. I will trade with you.
Yeah, in the Shivering Isles expansion, every shopkeeper threatens to kill you, and just the guy who's the king of it is just an insane person. If you attack him, he'll make you fall from the top of the screen.
Yes, that's right. Yes, he's wonderful. Yes. Butterflies and cheese all over the place.
Yeah.
Yes, Shagor.
Yeah, good stuff. Yes. I'm going to plug that. That is like much better than any of the Wicker Man sequels that I've talked about.
All right, well, let's light a match and burn the sucker down.
Caesar, oh, how the ego seized you. You're totally bonkers, waiting to divide and conquer. Down through the ages, got ears close to the sages. Don't go where you came. Warm your soul by the violet flame. Never futile is resistance. Light that appears in the distance. Integrate yourself and behold all along this journey of soul. You're just one in succession. How we could all have a ball in life without being so wild. Never futile is resistance. Light that appears in the distance. Integrate yourself and behold all along this journey of soul. Warn yourself by the violet flame. Warm your soul by the violet flame. Warm your soul by the violet flame. moisture. It turned